RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Mark Webster is a pharmacist and integrative health practitioner known as the Stay Well Man from the Stay Well Clinic. He was one of the very early guests we had on RCR when we really started to talk about health. And boy, that's come a long way since last time I caught up with Mark was in Christchurch at the NZD SOS conference right after that. And he's back with us because, here's why, coming into the Christmas season, we're looking at indigestion, why people get it and what can be done to manage it. Hi, Mark. Good to catch up with you again.
Hey, Paul. Thank you. Great to be here. Hello, everybody.
All right. No, I'm just feeling indigestion, just thinking about it now and visualizing all that food, though I'm not such a huge consumer at Christmas compared to years ago, let's say. I'm a lot more moderate, and that seems to work better for me, I've found out. Anyway.
Got some wisdom.
Yeah, well, age and trying to avoid that spare tire thing at this time of life, you know.
Absolutely. Paul, before we get started, I've just got a little disclaimer, if I can just read that out for the listeners.
Certainly, go.
So this information in today's interview is for general information purposes only and does not provide medical advice or any form of diagnoses or treatment of any kind to those listening to this interview. Please do your own research and consult with your healthcare provider who has the full knowledge of your medical history and any conditions and will work alongside you to make informed medical decisions.
Noted. Thank you. All right. Here's a general question on indigestion. Is it something that's kind of normal or does it indicate a problem?
Well, it shouldn't be normal. I guess it would be fair to say that everybody experiences some form of maldigestion or indigestion, right the way through from little babies, right the way through to, you know, people in their 90s and beyond. But if everything is in place and we're doing everything we're supposed to be doing, then it should be business as usual. And perhaps the odd occasion is fine, but if it's becoming a bit more frequent, that's when we begin to worry.
And what's kind of in a general sense going on? Is it the mixture of acids and digestive, I don't know, molecules or whatever is in the stomach working away?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the first thing to realize is that there are no teeth after the mouth. And so if we're chewing properly and allowing the food to be as easy to digest as possible, then that's all good. And if we are then, we've got enough of the digestive juices and acid and what have you in the stomach working, then that's good. The stomach's designed to break down your foods, your fats and your proteins. Interestingly enough, it doesn't break down your carbs. Carbohydrates start in the mouth and then they get broken down further in the small intestine.
Right, okay.
The stomach's also part of your innate immune system. It's keeping whatever is you're sticking in your mouth, it's trying to keep it sterile because you're going to get bugs hitching a ride, surfing on that saliva. Mm. And so we need to make sure that that's all taken care of. And then, interestingly enough, there's a valve at the top of the stomach called the gastroesophageal sphincter. And that is designed to keep everything in the stomach rather than flushing back up. And that's where people might say they have reflux. And so there's different forms of indigestion as well. You can get, you know, an inflammation of the stomach, gastritis, you can get reflux where it's coming back up. You need to also ensure that you've got adequate bits and pieces to absorb some really important nutrients like magnesium and zinc, iron and calcium and B12.
Right.
So all of that is really vital for proper stomach function. Then to answer your question, what can go wrong? Well, obviously, there's the obvious ones that you mentioned. You're eating too much. And of course, as you rightly point out, we're heading to the silly season where, you know, the pavlova and trifle come out and usually too the lamb or the turkey, which we don't normally eat. So we go back for seconds and thirds. But most of us you know, we don't live in a perpetual Christmas. And so there has to be some other things going on outside of that season. And I think one of the big ones is that we simply eat far too quickly. Mm. And we focus on eating as a function rather than a pleasurable experience. Right. I don't think we chew adequately as well, because again, we're trying to get down the food, and often we'll be distracted by other activities like, you know, watching the latest podcast of something. We might be not chewing sufficiently to get that food down to a decent size that the stomach can cope. And so that makes it problematic. We might be eating things that upset us, food intolerances. Some really common ones can be casein, which is the milk protein, or gluten from wheat and barley and rye. But there are others as well. And then if you're over 50, like you and I, we actually start making less of the digestive juices.
Oh.
And that condition is called hypochloridia, low stomach acid. Interestingly enough, though, those symptoms are the same as if you've got too much.
Okay.
And if you want an idea of what your stomach acid's like, have a look at your fingernails. And if you can find these long ridges that go from the cuticle down to your fingertip, and you can run your fingernail across those, then that's one indication that you may be suffering with low stomach acid rather than high stomach acid.
Okay. No, I'm looking and I don't see it, so...
Good. Yep. Excellent. And then you mentioned about the tire around the middle. So if you're overweight, or of course, if you're pregnant, both of those things will apply pressure to the tummy and that might cause it to sit higher up. You can get some more unusual things like delayed gastric emptying. And that's a function of the muscles not twitching in the right order at the right time. You'll get people who have a physical diagnosis of a hiatus hernia, which is actually where part of the stomach begins to bulge out. There's a gap in your diaphragm that lets the esophagus go through from your throat down to your tummy, and that's therefore a weak point. So a bit of stomach can actually blow out at that point, and that means then that sphincter we talked about, it holds everything in, doesn't quite do the job. And then lastly, which is quite common too, are the use of drugs that can upset the stomach. Things like non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, the like of what used to be called Voltaren or Diclofenac. What they do is they reduce the amount of mucus that's produced in the stomach by blocking a family of hormones. And part of that family makes pain and swelling worse. So blocking, that's a good idea. But blocking the others that produce more stomach acid, more stomach mucus to protect the stomach, by that being lower, they then block off the stomach acid so that you don't end up with a tummy ulcer or nasty indigestion.
Okay, the digestion process, that's got me interested. I'm thinking it maybe starts before any food hits anything. I mean, just thinking about the food maybe.
Absolutely. And smelling the food.
Right.
If the listeners want to just now think about a lemon and think about what it tastes to bite into a lemon and the tartness of that, you'll actually find if you focus on that for a few seconds, you actually get a shot of saliva in your mouth.
Ah, okay.
Because the body's already beginning to prepare for something going on. And then... You know, often if you've driven down the highway on and you stopped in traffic with a window down and one of the local, I don't know, pizzerias or one of these other joints has got their high fan on and they're blowing out all these wonderful smells, or the bakery's been cooking in the morning and you haven't had breakfast yet, you'll often find the stomach begins to growl and gurgle.
Reminds me of cartoons, you know, where the smell sort of, as a graphic, drifts across the nose of like Fred Flintstone or something, and... They fight
like one of those ghosts, sort of with the little ghostly fingers.
Yeah, that's right. They sort of follow where the smell's coming from.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, the kind of food that comes up in this period of time, you sort of rattled through a few, and you said we're not used to eating them. Do things we're not used to eating cause issues then?
Well, they can. I mean, some of our listeners will be blessed with what you and I might refer to as a cast iron stomach. Although what's really interesting is a significant percentage of people that have an active stomach ulcer actually had no indigestion signs whatsoever.
Okay, yep.
And so just because, you know, no news isn't necessarily good news when it comes to stomach health. But yes, I think it's fair to say that we're either consuming things, you know, more higher amounts of dairy product or higher amounts of sugar and cake and biscuits and so on and chocolate, all these fabulous things that get put in front of us. Paul, I've been keto for probably nearing on 2 years.
Oh yeah, how's that been?
Well, it's something I'm doing because I want to for health reasons, but I still miss it all. I've been gluten-free for 35 years and dairy-free for about 12 years.
Okay,
so some of my friends now would say that I'm gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, alcohol-free, and fun-free. But I still manage to find enough to keep me interested.
Yeah, okay. So think about the mix of food that you might be confronted with. What about those sweets to meats? You know, I never eat sweets, cakes, anything like that, hardly at all. Maybe the odd biscuit if it's lying around. It's a rare thing. So I don't even know how a quantity of that food would kind of feel anymore, but then piled on top of everything else, you know.
Yeah, I think we have to look at the individual. It's difficult to cookie cut these general rules, I've read some of the literature regarding, you know, you can't combine this type of product with that type of product. And I think that's fair for some individuals. But I think going back to asking, well, why is this happening? And seeing what you can do about it, taking your health back into your hands, because unfortunately the standard model of care that we would receive from pharmacies or medical practitioners is usually in the form of pharmaceuticals.
Yep. Going to ask
and
you
they
about
can
those,
have their products.
Yeah, I want to get on to them. One other thing, though, I always remember my grandmother saying every time we went and had dinner with her, which was quite often as kids, and we'd reach for the water. She said, no drinking yet. Let the food go down. Don't dilute it. Wait. And I kind of took that on. Is there something in that?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you add water to anything, you're going to dilute whatever you put into it. With most of my clients, I suggest actually about 20 minutes, half an hour before they plan to eat, have a glass of water with some lemon juice or some apple cider vinegar in the water, and that also can help assist boost the stomach acid. Some individuals will drink the water with their meal, and again, I guess if that's not problematic, then, you know, although that perhaps speaks of perhaps they haven't been drinking enough water the rest of the day, and finally they're sitting down, now they've discovered that actually they are a bit dehydrated, so they're trying to get their quota in, and that may be having an effect on the digestion of the meal. So I think as a mindful rule, that's a good idea. And if you're finding that you're drinking a lot of water during a meal, unless you've gone to the local Mexicano restaurant or the Indian and got a vindaloo, then perhaps you should be mindful that if you're consuming a lot of water, you may be slowing down the stomach's ability to digest what you're giving it.
It's easy to pop the antacids, isn't it? You go to the wherever convenience store, done it before, pop them in. Yeah, sweet, no problem. But that's just masking things, isn't it?
Well, with your antacids, that's just simple third form chemistry.
Yeah.
So it's acid plus bicarbonate equals salt plus water. And it will give you a temporary sort of thing. So the antacids are like your quickies or your Mylanta, or Tums, those sorts of, they're literally just calcium carbonate, most of them. And that just reacts with the hydrochloric acid that's in your stomach and neutralizes it. But that simply tells the stomach to make more acid, which will come later.
Yeah.
However, if you're low on the stomach acid to begin with, now you're just making life even harder still, and that's a problem.
Okay, so if serious medication is involved, needs to be involved, what are the options?
So one of the things that you'll often see is the use of things called alginates. So alginates, Gaviscon is the one that most people will know. And that forms a foamy raft that sits on the stomach's contents. So if you are going to get anything back washing up the tummy, up the esophagus, then it's more Gaviscon than anything else. And that's also used in pregnancy. It seems to be not have any detrimental effects that anybody's been able to find. And it doesn't affect the overall acidity, the pH of the stomach. So they'll often try that. But unfortunately, and also we used to use antihistamines, but special antihistamines. So rather than the ones for allergy, which are a histamine 2 receptor, these were a histamine 1. And the big one back in the day was Zantac. And Zantac or ranitidine was used for many, many, many years. And famotidine was another one, which is still available, but only on prescription and only under what's called a Section 29. So it's quite rarely used. But they withdrew Zantac off the market a couple of years ago because they discovered that the gentleman in India who'd been making all the ranitidine for the world supply decided to change one of the solvents because it was cheaper.
Yeah.
And regrettably, it then caused the ranitidine to break down into a toxic substance that was the equivalent of the amount of cancer-causing stuff you would get in 25 kilos of bacon.
Wow.
So you fry 25 kilos of bacon, and that's how much of this stuff was in one ranitidine tablet.
Gosh.
So, of course, there was this worldwide gasp, and they took this stuff off the market. Doesn't seem to be the problem with famotidine, but famotidine is not used. Now, and so that blocks one of the hormones in the stomach called histamine that stimulates the stomach acid. But the big one, which most people are aware of, is Losec or omeprazole. And then there's also the other ones. There's lansoprazole and pantoprazole.
Who thinks of these names, Mark? Gosh.
Oh.
Is there some back office somewhere that just churns out these names? AI now, probably.
Oh, look, there is actually a so-called science to this.
Yeah, I bet there is.
You know, if you get something that ends in lol, it's probably a beta blocker that slows down your heart. And so there's atenolol, metoprolol. But then you go and get these other ones that are zol as opposed to lol. And those are your stomach ones. So, but don't get me started on drug names.
No,
because
I won't.
We have drugs that sound so similar, and it just makes our job very difficult. And if we get a handwritten prescription these days, which is unusual now, but heaven help you, because misreading doctor's writing can still be
an
issue.
Do you still get faxes?
It's all email now.
Yep.
But our email for our faxes, we just call that fax.
Gotcha. Yep.
But it's all email, and then most of them are now barcoded, so they're an electronic prescription that comes out from the cloud. Ironically, we still have to print out the jolly thing at our end, so it's not actually saving paper, it's just costing pharmacy instead of the doctor.
Okay.
There. Yeah, that's another soapbox I don't want to get into.
Yeah, just on those names, I see how they delineate the sort of the class of drug or what they apply to, but they also have a marketing kind of ring to them as well, you know, that they can be said in a certain way or the, you know, number of syllables, sort of like the beat of music or something like that. There's something about that. That's why I wonder if there's that back room. Okay. What is the trigger for medicating, do you think? If you're having indigestion, you want to try and solve it first before you go to that, because most people just walk off the doctor and take whatever comes, I'm picking.
Well, and of course, you know, gastric pain is something that is important to signal and get checked out. And of course, the trouble is the stomach sits just, you know, sort of within near the sternum. And depending on where the pain is felt, it could also be heart. And so one of the big things we need to rule out is that the person's not actually getting angina. So, you know, if you're getting a one-off every now and then, that's still worthwhile mentioning to the doctor. But if you're getting persistent pain, and then over and above that, if you're getting nasty symptoms, like if you vomit and it looks like coffee grounds in your vomit, that's actually congealed blood from the stomach.
Oh, okay.
And I always, always, always ask people to have a look at their poo before they put the toilet paper in to make sure it still looks like poo and it's not a darker colour.
Sorry, did you say darker?
Yeah, if it's darker, so then there's bleeding. But that needn't necessarily be from the stomach. That could be from the intestine as well.
Yep.
If you get bright red blood, that's usually because you've got a little fissure, a little split right at the very end, just inside the anus or close by. But if it's darker and further up, then that's usually the large intestine. The stomach, if you get bleeding from a stomach, you can actually get what's called occult blood, where the blood's sort of hidden within the poo. And that's a bit more difficult. But, you know, again, we need to make sure that what's happening is actually taken seriously. And so then you might go to the doctor, and often they will give you some omeprazole or a PPI, a proton pump inhibitor, to see whether that takes an effect, because it really, at the end of the day, the difference between that and the others, it actually permanently shuts off the stomach pumps that make the stomach acid. Don't worry too much, because overnight you make more, and the next day you might shut it off again. But they'll do that first, and often they'll give you just a short course, maybe sort of, you know, 7 to 10 days, suck it and see what happens. Because the alternative, perhaps, is to go and get a gastroscopy, a tube down your throat to have a look in your tummy. But the cost of that, and also it comes with risks, because as the tube goes down, it can make a little tear in the esophagus, and there's all these other things. So often it's quick and easy to give you a short course of these drugs to see if that works. However, they're one of the most popular prescribed and consumed medicines in the world, which makes you go back to that original question, what the hell is wrong with people's stomachs?
Are there downsides, Mark, from using proton pump inhibitors? What are the downsides?
Well, of course, short term, there's no problem. But if you begin to affect the stomach acid long term, then you reduce the sterility of the stomach, so you allow oral bacteria and bacteria that was on your food to surfboard through and get into the small intestine. So now you start to change the bacterial content of your small intestine, and you get a problem called dysbiosis, which leads to other intestinal issues. If you are not absorbing good amounts of iron, calcium, zinc, magnesium, and B12, last time I checked, those are all really critical to so many processes in the body. There's also some very interesting research on how it can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease and stroke, and it can also increase the risk of dementia. And so that there's, I sent you some links to those so that people can check that out for themselves. Now, I don't want to worry people, though, because it's vital that you don't suddenly go, oh, my gosh, that's me. I'm coming off this stuff straight away.
Yeah.
Really important to discuss that and to just ask the question, is this dose the one I need to stay on? Could I come down off it? And if I can, how do I do that? But, yeah, there are some nasty long-term side effects with these that need to be addressed. And like all medicines, we should always be reviewing, is this the right thing for me? Is the dose the right thing for me? And can I come down? What's the lowest dose I can be on?
And we'll put those links up with the replay of this, so that'll help Fantastic. The folks. Alcohol, that's another thing that comes up at this time of the year. And then you're mixing it in with the food and all of that. Anything to say about alcohol?
Yeah, well, I agree. And, you know, some people will find that wine will cause them a trouble, or beer won't. Beer will cause them trouble, but wine won't. Whiskey doesn't have an issue, but on this person it does. I think with alcohol, we also need to remember alcohol is a poison. I understand, but I've been alcohol-free nearly 2 years. And again, I did that just for a decision for my health. But, you know, each to their own. Moderation, but then what is moderation?
Yeah, what is that?
Everybody's got their own definition. But again, if you've got issues with your stomach, why on earth would you be trying to find all the things that are going to upset it when you and pop pills Whereas instead, what you could do is go, right, well, let's start to examine some of my behaviors and some of the things I'm eating and consuming. Because if we take these medicines long term, they actually can have some nasty long term downstream effects.
If people want to get in touch with you, Mark, what's the best way they can do that?
They can go to my website, staywellman.com. That's probably the best way to get hold of me, because there's a way they can make an appointment, or they can send me emails through there, and I'm happy to answer some questions. And I'll always, though, make sure that, you know, not to do things like this. You know, if you've been listening and you think, right, well, I need to come off these pills, please do not do that yourself.
You're not saying that. No,
no way. Yep.
You need to get the information.
Yeah. And remember, everyone's an individual. And we try and keep your medical practitioner in the loop if need be.
Yeah.
Vital.
Okay, Mark, great to catch up with you again. Mark Webster, the Stay Well Man from the Stay Well Clinic. Have a great Christmas and New Year, Mark, and I'm sure we'll talk again in 2025.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everybody. Happy Christmas. Stay safe. Stay well.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.